Well, again, my name is Father Sean O'Manion, and I thank all of you and Father Michael for allowing me to come this evening to share the Stations of the Cross with you and to give you just a little bit of information on this Association of the Faithful that I direct in my diocese. And it's called the Guard of Honor of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's also, it has two names. Its other name is called the Hour of Presence. And what it is, it's more a spiritual association than anything else. You know, we don't have meetings or anything like that. And it's an association that promotes devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary, which is an order of some 210 monasteries throughout the world. There was one right here in England, in Sussex, Waldron. And it's an order that was co-founded in 1610 by Saints Francis de Sales and Saint Jane Frances de Chantal. And as you know, Saint Margaret Mary Alacoque, who was the one who received the message of the Sacred Heart, as we understand it today, in the 1670s, was a member also of the Order of Visitation. The other order that promotes devotion to the Sacred Heart in a slightly different way is, of course, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, which would be the order that St. Margaret Mary's spiritual director, St. Claude La Colombière, belonged to. The Guard of Honor was founded in 1863 by a visitandine, as the Sisters of the Visitation are known, in France. And it's an order that, I mean, it's an association that started growing very quickly. A year after its foundation, Blessed Pius IX joined it, and actually every pope from him through, you know, Leo XIII, St. Pius X, Benedict XV, all the way up to Pius XII belonged to the Guard of Honor, and St. John Paul II was also a member of the Guard of Honor. His hour of presence, the hour that he kept, was 12 to 1. I'll explain that in a little bit. Also, St. John Bosco was a member, several saints and blesseds. What do we do? What does it consist of? Well, you're all familiar with Sacred Heart devotion, but I'll just give you just a quick synopsis of what it's about. Sacred Heart devotion, as we practice it today, is something that we received as church from Jesus Christ in the messages that he gave to St. Margaret Mary. You'll remember in Paray-le-Monial at the Monastery of the Visitation there in the 1870s, 1873 up to 1875. And in it, he shows, as well, she is in adoration, he shows his heart of flesh to her, sort of reminding her and all of us that, you know, hey, I'm the Son of God, but I'm not only divine, I am human also. I love you with the love of God, but I also love you as a human being. And human love wants, perhaps more than anything else, to be requited. It wants a return of love. And you're all familiar with what happened, that he shows her his heart and says to her, look at my heart, behold this heart, which has loved men so much and has received in return little more than indifference, coldness, rejection, basically. And he says to her, but at least you, Margaret Mary, at least you, you can love me. And of course, in asking her to love him back, he is asking all of us to do the same thing, to just give a bit of return of love to God. God, the unfathomable Trinity, who has deigned to come to us in the Incarnation, but to become one of us, Emmanuel, and to dwell with us, to dwell among us. Now, Sacred Heart devotion doesn't begin there. As you know, there have been other exponents of devotion to the Heart of Jesus. for most notably perhaps St. Gertrude of Helfta, who I believe lived in the 13th century in what is today Germany, Benedictine abbess. And it goes farther back. For us in the Guard of Honor, we take as the point of departure Jesus crucified, dying on the cross, in fact dead on the cross, with his side pierced, his heart pierced, from which gushed forth blood and water, our baptism as church, so to speak, and through which we receive the mercy of God and the sacraments as church. Why do we call it the Guard of Honor? Well, it's because we place ourselves for 1 hour a day at the foot of the cross. That's what we do. We place ourselves mentally without changing what we're doing. We select an hour for one day. As I mentioned, John Paul II's hour was 12 to 1. My hour is 4 to 5. And we place ourselves mentally at the foot of the cross with the Blessed Mother, with Mary Magdalene, with St. John, the beloved disciple. The Guard of Honor, sort of like in the army, when you have a Guard of Honor who escorts an important personage, you're typically a funeral or something like that, you have a Guard of Honor of 3 or 4 soldiers around it. So Sister Maria of the Sacred Heart, Bernot, who founded the Guard of Honor in 1863, chose that term for it because she envisioned those 3 as a Guard of Honor around our dying King at Calvary, at the foot of the cross. And so for that 1 hour, we place ourselves at the foot of the cross with him. You'll remember how he was abandoned and his hour of need, that even Peter, everyone had deserted him. Peter, you know, Judas, who was one of the chosen 12, betrays him, turns him over to the authorities. Peter, the rock on which he would build his church, denies him 3 times, and not even at the point of a spear. He is just so consumed with fear that even just denies him to a servant woman 3 times, just as Jesus told him he would do. But those 3, at least, those are the ones who are typically traditionally depicted in artwork. Those 3, our Blessed Mother, St. Mary Magdalene, St. John the Beloved Disciple, are at the foot of the cross, and so for 1 hour we take our place with them. Now, Sacred Heart devotion goes back a little bit more, a few hours more, to the Last Supper as told to, as narrated to us by St. John in the 4th Gospel. You know that St. John's Gospel is very enigmatic and it's very different from the other 3, the Synoptic Gospels. His treatment of the Last Supper is radically different. He doesn't even mention the institution of the Eucharist, but of course he devotes the 6th chapter to the importance of the Eucharist for us, the vital and indispensable importance of it. He is the only one, for example, who mentions the washing of the feet, right, at the Last Supper. And he has Jesus praying to the Father for our unity at the Last Supper. There is an important thing. I want to talk a little bit about John, the beloved disciple, a unique figure in the history of Christianity, unique among evangelists, unique among the 12 apostles, the beloved disciple, he calls himself, in a gesture of humility, not identifying himself, but at the same time allowing an empty space for us to take our place using our imaginations, as St. Ignatius Loyola would have us do in our prayer, using our imaginations and placing ourselves in the places where the beloved disciple was as he accompanied Jesus. John was unique. John mentions very important things, almost in his typical humility, mentions them in passing. You know, he has, for example, at the Last Supper, a very important thing, something that Gertrude and other mystics have speculated on. When he reclines his head on the bosom of Jesus, when he reclines his head on the heart of God, and on the very heart of what John himself will later tell us in his first letter, the heart of love itself, because it was John, it wasn't even Jesus or anyone else. John was the one who tells us God is love. You remember how it happened. In the paintings that we see of the Last Supper, it's represented rather awkwardly. You have Jesus seated at a table the way we would sit at a table, surrounded by his disciples, and John leaning over awkwardly with his head over Jesus' chest. Well, no, the way John tells us, they were reclining at table, eating in the Roman fashion, you know, reclining, lying on their side on couches that would abut the table perpendicularly, resting on a shoulder and with a free hand just reaching over and taking the food, bringing it to their mouths. He was next to Jesus. Jesus would have been behind him. And when Jesus drops that bomb on them and says, one of you is going to betray me, the ensuing shock and the questioning among themselves happens. And John and Peter are talking across the table. So that John can hear him better, he mentions in passing, resting his head on the bosom of Jesus. He mentions it as if it were a little detail. Also, like he mentions in passing that God is love. That is his style. It's a style of humility, but he mentions it. And there are no spare words in the Gospels. The Gospels are the message of Jesus Christ. So it's very important, and mystics, theologians have speculated as to what happens. Think about it. When a fallen human places his little brain on the heart of God, on the heart of the Creator of the entire universe, in the heart of our Savior and Redeemer, what happens? We see through circumstantial evidence, we see that something happened because John's life was unique. He was the only one of the 12 who was present at the crucifixion. He is the only one who identifies God as love in his first letter. He is the only one who was given that vision of heaven, that vision of paradise, of the abode of God, in which he tries, as best as he can, to render intelligible to us using vocabulary, using imagery that his contemporaries would understand. So he says, the pearly gates that we're so familiar with, that we often hear about in jokes, for example, the pearly gates, the streets paved with gold, etc., etc. These are all images that John uses to try to convey the truth of heaven to us, the beauty of heaven. For example, God, he describes God as seated on a throne with an angel before him, with a thurible, constantly, ceaselessly incensing him, and that in that aromatic smoke is contained all of the prayers of humanity. Are just there rising as fragrant smoke to our Creator. Beautiful imagery that this fisherman who becomes a poet uses to describe what cannot be described to us, to help us understand a little bit of who God is and what God is. To describe that love of God, that agape, that love that seeks to give itself completely for the beloved, us, and yet calls us, reproaches us by saying, look, Can you love me back? I think you can. And so, in the Guard of Honor, we try to do that in a very simple way. Super simple. In fact, it's so simple that it's very helpful. I'll bet, as we say in the States, dollars to donuts, that all of you here have family members, loved ones, who have drifted away from the church. People who are too busy to go to Mass, that sort of thing. With the hour of presence that we commit to make daily to Jesus, that is a very easy way to introduce people to come back to communion with Jesus. And, you know, if we take baby steps towards Jesus, He will pick us up and He will carry us to the Father. All we have to do is make a small beginning. You know, Jesus, 1600 years later, appears through the Holy Eucharist at Adoration, appears to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque. A series of apparitions, you'll remember. The first one took place on the feast of St. John. Not coincidentally at all. The feast of St. John. And eventually, you know, you'll remember the story of St. Margaret Mary. She has a hard time understanding these visions, and there's suspicion that she might be mentally ill. There's suspicion that she's possessed by the devil. Even in her own monastery, she would walk down the hallway, and her own sisters would toss holy water at her. Her superior prohibited any mention of the Sacred Heart business. But Jesus told her, look, just keep at it. Keep at it. I'm going to send you my friend, and he's going to help you. Enter St. Claude La Colombière, a Jesuit, a young Jesuit who was brilliant at philosophy, theology, a very eloquent speaker. He seen from a human perspective, has a very promising future in the Society of Jesus. And yet, instead of being sent to a university or something, he is sent to this little town in the middle of nowhere, Paray-le-Monial, which even today, in the 21st century, it's hard to get to. It's a two-hour train ride from the city of Lyon. He is sent there to serve as a chaplain to a group of cloistered nuns, to have a completely anonymous and quiet existence. From a human perspective, of course, people think, well, what a waste of talent. But we all know that God does not think as humans do. He meets Margaret Mary, and to make a long story short, he tells her, look, this is real. These messages from Jesus are real. And so Jesus entrusts to this cloistered nun that this message be spread throughout the world and that a feast day be consecrated to him, etc. You know the details of the story. And it happened. It succeeded. First in France. France is consecrated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And then the Pope, some 200 years after Margaret Mary's death, Pope Leo XIII, a member of the Guard of Honor, by the way, consecrates the entire human race to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So this is very powerful. Some 30 years before that, the Guard of Honor was founded at a different monastery of visitation in Bourges, France, by Marie of the Sacred Heart. Bernot was her last name. And what she wanted to do is to respond to the complaint of Jesus as articulated in Psalm 69. I sought for comforters and I found none. She thought, you know, it would be neat if we could have some sort of spiritual association whereby people could offer an hour of their day without changing anything of what that hour entails, whether we're at work or if we're taking the kids to school or to football practice or whatever, to simply say at the beginning of that hour, Jesus, I am placing myself at the foot of your cross together with the quote-unquote guard of honor. I am taking my place with them, and I am with you to comfort you, to console you. And I offer this hour to you, whatever it entails, whether, you know, for good, bad, or indifferent, I consecrate this hour to you. And we do that every day. We don't have to go to a chapel. We don't have to change anything. It's a very simple way. So what Maria the Sacred Heart had envisioned was a clock, a dial. And so when people would sign up and pledge an hour a day, they would just send in their names, and she would inscribe their names on that dial. So mine is 4 to 5, so from 4 to 5, I've got my name written on the dial. There's also a secondary hour that one can offer if one wishes to. It's optional, what's called the Hour of Mercy, in which we can offer a second hour of doing the same thing for the conversion of a loved one. And so we send in the initials of that loved one, and the initials are inscribed in the hour. The thing is that this way, everyone around the clock, somewhere in all the time zones, someone is keeping watch with Jesus. And we're united in prayer with people all over the world, with thousands of people all over the world, and also through time. You know, people like I mentioned, St. John Paul II, or all the popes from Pius XII back to Blessed Pius IX, St. Joseph Mary Rubio. He was the director of the Guard of Honor in Spain, and he died in 1927. He was canonized by John Paul II. St. John Bosco was another member. We believe that the whole Martin family, the family of Teresa of Lisieux, were members. We don't have documentation on it, but you'll remember that her older sister, I think it was Leonie was her name, was a visitandi. She was the only one who was not a Carmelite. And by then, all the visitations throughout the world were devoted to the Guard of Honor. Then after the 1960s, it started to wane, so now we're just trying to start it up again. So I would invite you to please consider practicing this very simple devotion, simple from a human perspective, but very profound from a divine perspective. It will revolutionize your spiritual life. It is because you will be doing something that Jesus has requested specifically, to make ourselves present to him. And, you know, one might think, well, how can I do that? He was crucified 2,000 years ago, and I live, you know, here in the UK in the 21st century. I'm not in Palestine. But we have to remember one minor detail. Jesus was not just the man, Jesus of Nazareth. He is also the second person of the Holy Trinity, God the Son, pre-existing from before all time. So whatever Jesus did in this world continues in the eternal now, in what we call heaven, because he lived not only as God, as man, but also as God. That's why we have devotion to the child Jesus. Obviously, he didn't die a child. He died an adult in his 30s, but his childhood continues to take place outside of time in the eternal present, in the eternal now. So likewise with his crucifixion. So if I in prayer and using my God-given imagination place myself at the foot of the cross, however I may envision it, it doesn't matter. I am literally placing myself at the foot of the cross. I am offering consolation, the consolation which Jesus asks for in the words of King David in Psalm 69. I am doing something that he asks for, and something that he blesses and expresses great gratitude for in the form of blessings. So I brought some literature if you would like to learn more about it. Put it in the back table there. And if you'd like to submit your name, we would like to start up the Guard of Honor again, also known as Our Presence to the Sacred Heart of Jesus here in the UK. And there's also a website. You can do it online, or if you want to just mail in. There's no dues, nothing like that. Like I said, there's no meetings. It's simply an inscription, a spiritual inscription. And also, as I mentioned, you may want to consider, if you have loved ones who have left the church, maybe they might be open to doing something so simple. Just devote an hour without changing what they're doing to offer that hour to Jesus. They don't have to go to church. They don't have to change anything. But Jesus will meet them, and Jesus will bring them back to church. So again, thank you very much. I came out here from Massachusetts, and this is my first time in Stevenage, and I really appreciate your generosity in letting me come here and your patience in listening to me speak. So thank you, and God bless you all.